Trait stacks in corn and cotton seeds have gotten more and more advanced in recent years, but farmers are starting to think more critically about how much return these technologies offer. Could a new EPA proposal change the game of what genetics are even available? That's today on Field Posts. This is a DTN Progressive Farmer podcast that dives deeper into the most important trends in agriculture to explore the business's cutting edge. I'm your host, Sarah Mock. With Harvest 2020 well underway, Progressive farmers are looking to square away seed decisions for the 2021 season. As the future remains uncertain, being able to save on seed costs by optimizing rather than maximizing trait stacks is powerful bottom line protection. Today we're joined by DTN's Emily Unglesby to talk more about how farmers can think critically about what trait stacks are right for their operation. She'll offer insights on what tools are available for you to make those decisions, and she'll highlight a recent EPA proposal that could fundamentally transform which stacks stay on the market in the coming years. All that, and how to make sure your voice is heard on this matter, right after this word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by DTN Spray Outlook. Simplify your day with DTN Spray Outlook. This tool produces an intuitive red, yellow, green color outlook that indicates the appropriateness of making applications from day to day, hour to hour. All the details on spray risk, wind speed and direction, dew point, and temperature are displayed on a single screen, available either on your desktop computer or mobile device. It's ideal for operators like you who are juggling many chores at the same time. DTN Spray Outlook can be found in our platforms. For more information, please visit our website at www.dtn.com. Now, back to the show. DTN staff reporter Emily Unglesby's recent story for the DTN magazine offered insight on how farmers can unpack their stacks and better understand what the risks and returns on their seed investment might be. Emily,
give us a little idea of what the motivation was behind kind of this exploration of stacks.
Yes, definitely. So the issue that this was written for in Progressive Farmer was about sort of getting the most out of your corn, because this was a time when farmers were really watching their margins. And corn seed prices have really crept up over the last decade as companies have put more and more of these trait packages in them. And the companies put a lot of research into those traits. So then they request a technology fee from the farmers who plant them. So it can be very costly to plant some of these corn hybrids. And a lot of the best corn genetics are tied to these big trait packages that provide resistance to above ground and below ground insects. So what we're trying to remind farmers of, and a lot of them know this, you know, we featured a farmer in the story, is that you can still find corn products without these big pricey trait packages. But it takes a lot of work to A, find them, and to B, know what you can get rid of, which traits you can get rid of safely, and not find yourself with a lot of insect damage the next year. So that was the thrust of the story. How do you safely figure out what traits you can remove from your corn and still keep really good solid corn genetics and not suffer too much insect damage?
The thing that's often overlooked is what we would do in place, you know, if these traits didn't exist, or if they were not widely used, you know, what we would do instead. Could you talk a little bit about alternative pest protection methods that, you know, are still being used or are still being experimented with right now?
The advent of using BT traits in corn has definitely given us a generation of farmers who are not maybe accustomed to alternative pest control that their fathers, grandfathers had to do. And basically, it involves a lot of scouting, a lot of watching local moth trapping networks, a lot of insecticide use, and learning when, and you have to know an insect's biology really well to know when you best apply an insecticide. And you've got a pretty big spectrum of pests to worry about. You know, you have the European corn borer who burrows into a corn plant and is then protected from any insect insecticide, so very hard to treat. You have Western bean cutworm who is best controlled by spraying it when its eggs are about to hatch on the leaves, because it also will burrow into the plant quickly after it emerges. So you had to have really, really good agronomic knowledge of the insects in your area, what your pest pressures were, what the pest pressures south of you were, because a lot of these insects migrate north, and you needed to know what insecticides worked, when they needed to be applied. And a lot of people also utilize things like crop rotation much more seriously to try to control these pests than they really have to do now. A lot of corn on corn really wasn't practical 20 years ago because of the pests that would build up.
There's certainly still people around that have kind of this level of knowledge. I think a lot of them might be, you know, extension agents or might be agronomists or working in other kind of areas of the industry. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, as farmers start to think about these things, who are resources maybe in their community already who they can start to reach out to have these conversations and start to gain this knowledge?
That's a really good question. So I would say that this knowledge is still definitely in the ag community. Extension agents, absolutely. And also your own pest or your own seed dealers and seed companies, they also have to track pest pressures. They also have to pay attention to this. So your seed representatives can sometimes help. They often have their own trapping networks out there. And then agronomists of any sort, whether or not they're with your seed company or your local co-op or just their own consulting company, they studied this. This is everything they do. Your integrated pest management specialists at the university, and also farmers who had to do this once. So, you know, your grandparents, your parents, if you're a young farmer, might have this knowledge still at hand and just really need to start trying to reapply it.
You know, how do you see this kind of the need for this knowledge changing? You know, I think kind of on both sides, we have one, like changing weather patterns and changing pressure on that side. And then on the other hand, we also have just the fact that there's, you know, resistance is happening and the pressure on the traits themselves are changing. So, you know, for folks who maybe are in a situation right now where it doesn't seem, there doesn't seem to be a lot of pressure to be having these thoughtful conversations about their traits, what, you know, do you see that pressure is only going to build in the future? Or do you think that lack of pressure is going to continue?
No, absolutely. The insect resistance side of this equation is probably only going to get worse in the near future. I would remind growers that of all of the BT traits that are on the market for corn, above ground and below ground, there is only one out of like 10 or 12 that does not have documented insect resistance to it. And that trait is actually showing signs of weakness in the South, where there's a lot of pest pressure. So there is almost no BT trait on the market that doesn't have some population of insects that can tolerate it. And for some of them, there are so many insect populations that can tolerate them that they're almost non-functional as traits anymore. So this is a topic that every corn farmer should probably start thinking about. Even if you aren't in the heart of the Corn Belt, resistance is going to be an issue. And in fact, sometimes in the fringe areas of the Corn Belt, you can also get these big pockets of insect resistance because farmers have much fewer corn hybrid options. And some of them are still planting single BT trait hybrids, which have been sort of phased out in the Corn Belt where you have more hybrid options, because the single trait hybrids are the only one that are still available in those regions. That's how we got the first case of a European corn borer population that is resistant to Cry1AB. It's because farmers in the far, far northern Corn Belt in Canada only had this single trait corn hybrid as an option. So they were planting it year after year. And so they got the industry's first European corn borer resistant populations, BT resistant populations. There's resistant populations, BT rootworm resistant populations down in Texas, because some of the silage hybrids that they grow down there for livestock have only single BT traits or just two BT traits, one of which is compromised. So it's functionally a single BT trait hybrid. So again, this is going to be an issue for all corn growers, if not today, in the near future.
Let's get into these traits a little bit. So give us kind of an overview of what are the traits that are available? What are the most common, you know, what, if people are out, you know, thinking about purchasing seeds for 2021, what are they likely to see and how should they be thinking about what's available to them?
So there's sort of two classes of BT traits. One class are the above ground BT traits, and they target your lepidopteran pests. That's basically caterpillars that turn into moths. And then you have your below ground traits, which target the western and northern corn rootworm. And you will find that there are only about, there's really only a handful of BT traits on the market. And what happens is that different seed companies license them, combine them, and then sell them under a certain brand name. So it seems there's this illusion that we have this huge spectrum of BT trait package options because every company's got their own name on these packages. But the reality is that there's actually only about five or six BT traits, and they're just being packaged, sorted and packaged differently by each company. And everybody is using the same traits ultimately. So that's what farmers will see. They'll see something on their seed tag bag that tells you that this is a SmartStax or a PowerCore. And that sounds really big and really strong, but if you actually look at the traits, you'll see that it says AcreMax 1. And it has two traits in it. One targets above ground pests. One targets the western corn rootworm. And he's like, that's awesome. And then maybe he'll have another variety that's Herculex Extra. And it also has an above ground and a below ground. And it's two different names and it's two different companies. And he thinks he's rotating them every year. But they have the exact same BT traits in them. And so you're not rotating modes of action. You're using the exact same traits. And that's really what's happened within the industry is that there really is just a handful of traits out there. Companies put pretty much the same ones into their packages, and everybody's been using these same traits for 25 years, or, you know, some of them on and off for 25 years. And that's why we're seeing so much insect resistance develop.
In terms of when you are, you know, as an agronomist kind of looking at these, evaluating these, you know, seeds from different brands, How do you gain access to that information? Like, what do you look for when you're looking at either a seed tag or a list of seed varieties? How can you tell what the actual trait is versus just, you know, the brand name?
Oh, that is such a good question. And I'm so happy to say that there is a really, really amazing resource that is put together by two scientists, one from Michigan State University, one from Texas A&M. And it lists, it's called the Handy BT Trait Table, and it lists every BT trait sold and the name of every trait package that's on the market right now, what traits are in it, what insects those traits target, and then it has this wonderful column where it shows you what insects have resistance to this trait and in what region. And then it also will tell you important things like what the refuge you have to plant or don't have to plant and what the herbicide tolerant trait that comes along with it is. So it's an amazing resource and it takes a lot of work. And I really, really encourage every farmer to have it somewhere on their farm when they are going through their corn hybrid selection process, because it really just breaks down exactly what you need to know about what's in each corn hybrid you could select.
I want to ask a question too about scale, because I think, you know, especially as we are all living in the world of COVID right now, I think we hear sometimes conversations about landscape level suppression of some of these pests. And I think of it kind of as a type of like herd immunity for a crop, right? That if enough of the plants in a landscape are planted with traits that prevent it against an insect, shouldn't that be protecting kind of the whole crop from the insect, because there's just not a place for kind of the population of pests to get a foothold? So I wonder if that, you know, does that actually make sense as a way to think about these pests, and what are the risks of thinking about pest protection and these traits on that kind of landscape level?
So landscape level suppression of insects has definitely happened with BT, but it's only happened in a really reliable way with insects that the BT traits had a very, very high level of efficacy against. And for example, European corn borer, we have really seen landscape level suppression of that insect because the toxins that target it, Cry1AB, it's just really good against this insect. But that's not the case for most of the insects targeted by BT traits. Most of them are the BT traits don't have quite as much efficacy. So you get these escapes every year, and if they find each other and mate, you get more and more resistant insect populations building up. That's why resistance to the European corn borer has been very small, and the populations really have been suppressed. But Western corn rootworm resistance has developed rapidly, and it's pretty prominent in the Corn Belt now.
What do farmers need to know about the resistance profile on their own operation when they're, you know, trying to take a look at, you know, if they understand the pest pressure that they're under and they understand the traits that are available to them, how do they kind of, you know, link those two pieces of knowledge together and make ensure that, you know, they're not giving up traits that they need, but that they're not paying for traits that they don't need, and that could possibly be, you know, giving them, setting them back in the long term in terms of that resistance profile?
There are a couple ways to find out what insects might be resistant to what BT traits in your area. The first one is the handy BT trait table, which has that column where it shows you what insects are resistant to the traits in your product. The second is your land grant university, wherever it is in your state. The entomologists there, whether they are extension or just sort of academic faculty, will probably have a sense of what's in your region, especially the extension the extension entomologists who are often testing insect populations for resistance pretty regularly. So that's a good way. And honestly, farmers often probably have a pretty good feel for it because they know that if they grow this hybrid, their corn lodges really easily, you know, or the neighbor's corn lodges really easily when they grow that hybrid. So there are outward signs of resistance that a lot of people can pick up on. The most dangerous pest for this is Western corn rootworm, because it does not appear in the same levels of infestation every single year, because there are sort of outward weather factors that can impact how big a population is from year to year. So we've had pretty low rootworm populations in the Corn Belt for several years now, because we had a big floody season in the June of, I think it was 2015, and it really wiped out a lot of rootworm populations. A lot of people started with clean slates. So there are a lot of people out there who are not thinking about Western corn rootworm and not worried about it because populations have been so low and it's underground and it's hard to scout for. But populations are building back up, and those populations are very resistant to BT traits. Even the pyramided BT traits, there's just a lot of resistance in the genotypes of these Western corn rootworm populations. Even though populations have been low, there's no reason that they will have gotten less resistant to BT, because we've continued to use the same BT rootworm traits in the last 5 years. So they're, even the low populations have been exposed to that. So that is an insect that could really surprise a farmer next year who is not paying attention to what rootworm traits they're using and what the resistance profile of the rootworm is in their area. And that is definitely something people should be thinking about this fall.
Regionally, obviously, pest pressure can vary pretty significantly, and it has to do with all these other exogenous kind of weather factors. But is there any regions that you think are at particularly at risk for kind of either new pests or, you know, pest pressure becoming, you know, dramatically more significant in the next couple of years where you think farmers should, you know, if you're in this area, you should definitely be thinking really critically about this kind of stuff?
Yes, I would say that farmers in the heart of the Corn Belt, so Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, southern Minnesota, maybe eastern Nebraska, and then just south of that, I think they should be thinking about western corn rootworm. That is an insect that has developed resistance to every BT trait on the market against it. And there is not a new mode of action coming for next year. And there is one new one out there, but it's awaiting import approvals and has been for a while. So we just don't know when that's going to be on the market. I really would think that farmers in the Corn Belt should be keeping an eye and thinking about western corn rootworm. And then southern corn farmers and southern cotton growers should definitely be worried about preserving this last remaining above ground BT protein with no resistance against it, which is VIP3A. They should be using products with VIP in it because resistance to the other above ground BT traits in the South is pretty widespread. And they should be really working to preserve the efficacy of that trait because it's sort of the last remaining sentinel down there. And there's a lot of selection pressure against it because VIP3A is used in both corn hybrids and cotton. And those are grown in the same region, sometimes in the South. So that's what I would be worrying about if I were a southern crop grower.
You know, as farmers kind of evaluate the genetic stacks of their seeds, you know, it feels like part of this is kind of just a direct trade-off, you know, either spend or farmers can at times think of it as a direct trade-off. You can either spend money on the traits when you're purchasing your seed, or you can spend time and money scouting later in the year. And, or, you know, you could spend that money instead of spending your own time scouting, you can hire someone to scout. Is that kind of the direct trade-off that's happening? Or is that a more complex picture of what the options are?
No, I really think that's exactly it. Except that sometimes you are spending money for the traits, and because of insect resistance, you are not getting the value of the protection, and you also have to be scouting and spraying insecticide too. So there is a third worst case option out there. But yes, otherwise, if your traits are still working in your region against your pest spectrum, it's a choice between paying for those traits and then not having to worry about managing those insects as actively, or paying with your time or with your money to scout and treat for those insects.
As farmers are evaluating their traits, you know, I think, well, one important question I think in this whole conversation is if a farmer considers, you know, what traits are available to them and decides maybe, you know, some older conventional, more conventional varieties might be a good fit for them, either because of resistance or because there's just not enough, you know, pressure to justify them or whatever the case may be. What happens then if you have, you know, a mid-season outbreak?
Right. Well, and that threat of the mid-season outbreak is really what we were trying to get to in that story, was to remind people, even if you don't have big pest pressure from a certain pest each year, and that's what has led you to decide to removing a trait from your corn package, your corn hybrid trait package, have a plan regardless. Have a plan in place. Know who you would call with a high clearance sprayer if you suddenly need to spray your cornfield for adult rootworm beetles. You know who you would call if you need somebody to scout for western bean cutworm because you've heard pressures are really high and you weren't expecting that and you don't have an above ground BT option in your corn. So just have a plan for things going south, even if you don't expect it, if you pull these BT traits out.
So I'm curious, as you, it seems like I've kind of heard, you know, a lot of conversation, especially in the last couple of years, of farmers becoming a lot more thoughtful on these traits and what they need. And, you know, as they start to optimize or continue to optimize for inputs, you know, as commodity prices have stayed down, has this, from what you've seen and in your reporting, is the industry kind of taking note of this? Is there more of a maybe thoughtfulness or intention in marketing from the industry side of making sure that, you know, traits the farmers have varieties that are available with or without traits, you know, kind of what works best for them rather than just always pushing kind of the most, I feel like the most traits for a long time was the way to go. Do you see any kind of shift on the industry side in response to the farmers being a little more thoughtful on this?
You know, that's, I think the jury's still out on that question. I know I hear a lot from farmers that it is hard to find elite corn hybrids without some of these trait packages. And they are available, but you have to do a lot of research and you need to give your seed dealer a lot of heads up that you want them, for example. So that is definitely still an industry issue, that so many of these traits are tied to companies' best corn hybrids. So if you opt out of them, you might lose some of the genetic potential there. But on the other hand, there are still hybrids without some of these pricey trait packages that yield really well. In fact, I've heard a lot about farmers who are growing corn hybrids in Illinois, in that area, without Western corn rootworm trait packages in them, which is kind of a risky thing to do because that's a big place for Western corn rootworm. But they're doing it by scouting very carefully or having their agronomist or their seed dealer agronomist scout very carefully for the presence of Western corn rootworm in the year before they plant their corn. So they can know whether or not they can plant this corn hybrid without Western corn rootworm and get better yields because the hybrid just really has good yields and save money. And companies have paid attention to that. And I know now that several companies, including smaller regional companies and larger corporate companies, are tracking Western corn rootworm populations in the corn belt. And they are using these old-fashioned yellow sticky traps to track them. They're encouraging their customers to track them. They have their agronomists collecting data on these Western corn rootworm populations so that people can safely choose between their available hybrids with or without rootworm trait packages. So in that corner of the world, I have seen some company interest in helping growers do this. I have not seen that happening with above-ground insect threats. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag there.
Deep in the pest protection and crop protection space, we talk a lot about modes of action, but I think it's not always talked about as much among it, kind of in, amongst farmers themselves and the importance of switching modes of protection and, or modes of action in pest protection. So I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that and how modes of action play into this question around trait and how rotating those modes of actions can be, you know, are not just an investment in protecting the viability of these traits, but kind of in really the viability of your crop acres.
The idea with switching modes of action is that the BT proteins, all of them target different things in the insect, very slightly different things in the insect they're targeting. So when you use one over and over, you develop insects that are tolerant to that, you know, to whatever protein the BT toxin is targeting in the insect. So if you switch them, the idea is that you will better protect yourself by avoiding building up these resistant populations to a single toxin. The reality is a little bit more complex now because we do have so many BT resistant insect populations that it's actually hard to switch modes of action with some of these corn hybrids. And particularly with Western corn rootworm, for example, there are like four or five Western or rootworm BT traits on the market, but some of them are so closely related that if you have an insect that is resistant to one, it will automatically be resistant to another BT trait, even if it's never encountered it. So there's a lot of, that's called cross resistance. There's a lot of cross resistance with insects against BT traits out there. And that actually makes it very hard for farmers to rotate modes of action with BT traits, because even if you switch to another trait, If it happens to be one that's cross-resistant with the trait you were using, you haven't gained any more control. And the other thing that makes it hard for farmers to rotate modes of action with BT traits is the fact that a lot of companies are selling the same trait packages. And it's hard to know what is in each one. So farmers may not realize that they're using the same ones year after year, and they might try to switch. And frankly, there just aren't that many different combinations of BT traits out there. So switching modes of action with BT insects or BT traits is a lot harder than it is with switching modes of action with weed control. It's just not quite as simple because of the way BT trait packages are packaged and sold, and because of cross resistance in insect and populations. Because of these nuances with BT traits, companies' response has been to just stack more and more traits together in these pyramided products and have farmers use the latest pyramided products. So that's really how farmers have tried to protect themselves against insect resistance, is to just use the most and latest pyramided BT trait package on the market. The problem with that is by the time some of these pyramided products came to market, insects were so resistant to the earlier traits that those pyramids are compromised because the insects really are only controlled by one or two traits in that big pyramid that might have four or five traits in it. So it's very complicated and hard for farmers to manage BT insect resistance because of that.
So the EPA is proposing some changes to the regulation around these BP traits in an attempt to control resistance. And I wonder if you could give us kind of the news update on what those proposed changes are and you know, what those might mean for the farmer's ability to access these traits in the next, you know, few years.
Right. So earlier in September, EPA released this proposal on slowing the development of BT resistance just in above ground insects, those lepidopterans, the corn earworm, fall armyworm, western bean cutworm. It would be a big change. Now, this is just a proposal, and they want farmers' comments or anybody in the ag community's comments that would be impacted by this before November 9th. That's the end of the public comment period on this proposal. And the proposal has a lot in it. It's been many years in the making, but the big pieces of it that might affect farmers day to day is that EPA wants to change when and how resistance is reported to it. In the past, companies weren't required to report a BT resistant insect population until they had run these what are called bioassays on the insects to determine that they were this much resistant when they ate this much of the toxin, and it took a long time. And so by the time a lot of BT resistant insect populations were formally reported to EPA, they were widespread in fields already. So EPA wants to change that. They want to know as soon as a BT corn or cotton field experiences a certain level of unexpected injury. And they've listed those levels in this proposal. And that would be known as practical resistance. And companies could go on to say, no, we tested the insects. They're not resistant. It was a weather thing. Or yes, we tested the insects and they are resistant, but EPA wants to know about it well before then. They want to know as soon as the farmer is seeing these levels of injury. They're going to require that companies report that injury, that unexpected injury, to the agency. They also want there to be corn sentinel plots throughout the Corn Belt and the South, I believe, where entomologists would be tasked with putting up these corn plots and watching to see what levels of injury they get, to try to have these sort of sentinel plots that set off alarms if they're seeing a lot of injury from a certain insect. So not just depending on farmers and companies to report resistance issues in the field, but actually having these sentinel plots tracking it as well. The other thing that could change, they are thinking about increasing the percent of seeds in a refuge in a bag corn hybrid that are non-BT. And they're also going to up the penalties for not complying with BT refuge requirements. That's planting a certain percentage of your crop as non-BT. So to try to dilute resistant insects that are coming out of the BT crop by having them mate with insects coming out of the non-BT crop so that you sort of dilute those resistant genes in a population. So they're very important to plant those, and we know that refuge compliance in the South is not great. It's pretty low. And EPA wants to change that. So there's going to be worse penalties if you are caught not planting your non-BT refuge in the South for Southern corn growers. You'll lose access to a company's seed much faster. Your seed dealer will get in trouble if they didn't verify that you were planting this. So they're also, and this could be a positive for farmers, EPA wants to try to make sure that companies make elite corn hybrids more easily available in non-BT corn seed so that farmers don't have to plant inferior corn hybrids in their non-BT refuge to, in order to, you know, follow EPA's regulations. EPA wants a farmer to not be penalized by yield much if they plant those non-BT refuges. But the big thing that could affect farmers, and it's out there right now, is that EPA wants to phase out a lot of BT corn and cotton products out there because the traits in them are so non-functional. So they want them off the market in the next 3 to 5 years. And it's a pretty extreme proposal, and it's almost certain to be challenged by industry. But farmers should pay attention to it, and they should comment if they don't like it, because EPA is essentially proposing phasing out all BT corn hybrids on the market that do not contain the VIP3A protein. That is, incidentally, most BT corn hybrids on the market. So they are proposing this very large phase out over the next 3 to 5 years of a lot of very common and very popular BT corn trait packages, including things like VT Triple Pro, Smart Stacks, Power Core, Chrome, a lot of the AgriSure corn hybrids, a lot of the Optimum Intersect hybrids, just really almost everything. AgriSure Duracade, Double Pro. So it's a lot of things. They've actually even proposed phasing out in 5 years a big trait package called Smart Stacks Pro, which has a next generation rootworm mode of action in it. They're proposing phasing that out in the next 5 years, and it actually hasn't reached the market yet. It's not even commercialized. So it's a pretty extreme proposal. Farmers should pay attention to it, and they should read it. We have a big story up on our website right now listing every single corn hybrid and cotton variety that's been proposed for a phase out, as well as multiple places to links to where you can comment on this EPA proposal if you think that it's a bad idea to phase out any of these, or if you object to anything else in that larger EPA BT management proposal.
I guess the obvious question to ask is, you know, are these BT traits that they're planning to, that EPA is proposing to phase out, are they still effective?
Some of them aren't. So EPA has separated into two tables, the 3-year phase out and the 5-year phase out. The 3-year phase out is single trait BT products, which are very compromised by insect resistance and have largely been marginalized in the market already because of that. But the second table is BT pyramids that are compromised because one or more of the traits in them don't work very well against the insects they target. And those are still very much in use in the industry, very popular because of, you know, the other things that come along with these trait packages. Hybrids have so much more to offer than just these BT traits, you know, when it comes to yield and genetics and disease resistance and standability. I mean, there's just a lot at play within an individual corn hybrid. So these are still in use. They're still popular, even if they have less insect control than they used to. And I think that farmers should really pay attention to those on the list.
For links to the resources Emily mentioned in today's interview, check out the show notes. You can also read Emily's full analysis in the DTN Progressive Farmer magazine and keep up with the up-to-the-minute reporting on all things seed and agronomy at dtnpf.com. This episode of Field Post was brought to you by the team at DTN Progressive Farmer, with special thanks to Emily Unglesby. This episode was produced and edited by me, Sarah Mock, with support by Greg Hillier and Kylie Swanson. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until then, remember, the future of farming is here. This episode is brought to you by DTN Hay Timer. Hay and forage quality isn't just about yield. It also relies on the perfect weather window to ensure a good crop. Use DTN Hay Timer, part of MyDTN, to quickly assess risk by viewing maps specifically designed to show circumstances affecting hay quality. Pennsylvania producer David Graybill said, quote, "Other weather forecasts were not accurate enough. As DTN Hay Timer shows, it takes the right combination of drying to preserve the crop. I would guess we lost 3 to 4 times the value in crops that it would cost us to keep our DTN subscription for the year." DTN Hay Timer is part of the MyDTN platform. Visit mydtn.com to start a free 14-day trial.